And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Jerry Wubin from Lake Charles. He's a professor at McNeese, a professor of art, here to talk about an exhibit at the Acadiana Center for the Arts, in which he has some pieces. The exhibit is called FaceTime, and it will be up through June 14th at the ACA. It opened a month ago, and it's a collection of portraits, a wide variety of mediums in the exhibit, all the way from video to drawing to painting to sculpture. And your pieces, Jerry, I have to say, I went and saw the exhibit today. When you walk in the door, you have three enormous pieces that just overwhelm the exhibit and really inform, I think, a person's visit to this exhibit. How much contact did you have with the curators when they chose your pieces to inform a person's entrance into this exhibit?
Well, thanks. I appreciate the compliment there. It was roughly, I think, about a year ago. I've known Brian for some years, and he knows my work. And he let me know back then that there was going to be a show in the next year considering faces. And that's one of my main subject matters when it comes to drawing. So he got a hold of me not too long ago, and I was honored. And it's a fantastic space. It's actually one of the best spaces I've seen in Louisiana. And my work goes all over the map, but my big stuff like that reads extremely well, and they put it in a very generous spot.
I like the way you say that, reads extremely well. It's very detailed, very realistic, and you almost can't take your eyes off of the pieces. I had to wrench them away to make myself go around the corner and look at some of the other pieces. Have you been working in that format for a long time?
That particular format, roughly, with the heavily detailed stuff, probably 15 years. I've been working that big since 1989. But with that really detailed look, roughly about 15 years. And the reason being is that I used to draw from life where I had the model in front of me. I'd set up the four sheets and then just start drawing. But it got to the point where my technique kept getting more and more sophisticated, and it demanded more time. And so what I started to do was start to use photographs. And I would take the photograph and blow it up to about 8 by 12 inches, and then I'd put it on a music stand and just start drawing. And part of the reason being is that a lot of these people live elsewhere. Like, there's two drawings in the show of my dad, and he, of course, can't be here to sit. And so that's how I do that. And it takes a lot of discipline, because you got to respect every square inch, because mm-hmm. every square inch is supposed to have that intensity of meaning and
And there are a lot of square inches in those pieces.
Yeah.
Well, let's take you back a bit, talking about your past, and then we'll come up and talk more about these portraits, yours
sure.
and the others in this exhibit. You work in a wide variety of mediums. Printmaking is what you
right.
studied primarily, but these are drawings. You do sculpture, many other forms of art. Where did you first get your artistic training?
Well, I grew up in Grand Junction, Colorado, and I knew that I could draw in kindergarten. It was just in my blood. But I didn't really start developing it until I got to college. I was math and science in high school. And then I took a drawing course back at – it was called Mesa College at the time. This was in Grand Junction. And I had a professor there, Doug DeVinny, who saw something that I didn't. And he was a very good early mentor, and he very kindly sort of taught me. And I very slowly developed my technique, and that was in drawing. And he was a printmaker, and primarily in intaglio, and that's where I got a love of that. So I started there, and I was there for 2 years, got my associate's degree, and then I went to Colorado State. And I went there partly because Doug went there. And there was a master engraver there named Jack Orman, who's one of the best engravers ever out of the United States. And I studied with him for 2.5 years. Got my work up to a level that was good enough to get me into one of the best grad schools in the country, which was Indiana University, which coincidentally where Doug went also. So I went there and spent 3 years at Indiana University in Bloomington and studied with two extremely good printmakers, one Rudy Pizzotti, who is world-renowned, and also a guy that I assisted, Marvin Lowe. And I was very fortunate to study with those guys. But they were all extremely generous in mentoring me, and I was lucky that way.
Well, your transition from, you said that you sort of drawing was in your blood. You always knew that you could draw. And of course, a lot of parents look at their children's drawings and think, oh, look at that, such a great artist. But you had that feeling yourself.
Yes.
Did you draw constantly? Did you draw on the walls? Did you draw in notebook? What did you do?
My development was kind of interesting that way in that I did not draw. it was like I was a closet artist. I always knew it was there. And occasionally I would draw. But I was mainly into math and science, played basketball, tennis. But I did take one art class in ninth grade, and just because of that class, I got an A+ in the art student of the year, which should have told me something. But then I shelved it for a little bit longer, and I had another teacher. I took two art classes in high school, and one in particular was a good inspiration. But I thought I'd go into architecture or something like that. I wasn't quite sure.
But so that's why you said that it took your professor in college who saw something in
right.
you, the one you kept following, or he kept following
right.
you around the country.
Right.
you were a tag team of artists. Well, how did you go from drawing? I think printmaking is a mysterious art to many people. What drew you to printmaking?
What drew me to it was the depth of the textures and the values. When you take acid and etch a metal plate, there's almost like nothing like it in the printmaking realm with so much textural depth. And in the art world, it's a small world. And I was taught by a bunch of students who all went to the University of Iowa, and they all studied with a guy named Mauricio Lozansky. In fact, a local professor, Brian Kelly, who's a very good printmaker, has some of the same background. And there's this philosophy of deeply bitten plates and really digging into it, all based on very, very strong drawing skills. And that's what drew me to it. And plus, and this is my own little theory, I grew up climbing rocks in western Colorado, which is a very, very textural environment. And one thing that you could probably connect with all my work is just the heavy texture. In fact, the drawings in the show are heavily textured with their skin. And that all goes back to spending hours and hours dealing with the etch plate. That's my theory.
Well, that you describe boulders in Colorado is fascinating because I'm just suddenly the images are flashing in my head of your portraits at the ACA, and you could see rocks in their faces.
Right. Well, in particular, my dad, who he practiced medicine for 44 years in Grand Junction, I looked at his skin as a Western landscape. In fact, the first – I still think it's my best drawing, at least of a head ever – the frontal drawing of my dad, when I took the photograph of him, it was just as the sun was going down in the desert, and that's what I wanted to convey with that light. The other one with of him, he was running, and he had fallen on some trails up in the rocks, so that's why there's bandages on his nose and all that. But I wanted to treat his skin as basically a Western landscape.
I'm so glad you said that, because that just resonates so much with those pieces, and saying that the sun was setting, there's something in his eyes. And you're talking about that middle portrait.
Right, exactly.
That one that greets you just as you walk in
right.
the door. That light in his eye and the texture of the skin. That's,
right.
I'm so glad you...
And that's homage to my dad. I mean, that's my dad.
Well, I want to tell people who might have just tuned in on their radios, my guest is Jerry Wubin. He is a professor at McNeese in Lake Charles, a professor of art. He has exhibited all over the country, nationally, internationally, with his work. He does printmaking, as he's been describing. He does drawing, painting, sculpture. And you can see three of his very large-scale drawings right now at the Acadiana Center for the Arts in their exhibit called FaceTime, which is a collection of very interesting mediums of all portraits. So how do you still do printmaking?
Yes, I do. I do it mainly in the form of engraving. Mm-hmm. One of engraving is a sort of a sub-technique, and there's not many engravers in the United States, actually. It was something I was actually born to do, and it's a very, very sensitive media, very, very elegant, and very difficult. I introduce it to my students, and it takes a lot of trial and error because it's difficult. But once they get it, you know, the sky's the limit.
Well, I guess give people, lay people like myself, okay, a sense. When we look at money, is that engraved?
Yes.
That's engraved.
Yes.
Okay, so people can get a sense of that.
They're technical engravers, mm-hmm, and those things take hours and hours. In fact, one of my former students, who's one of the best engravers in the world, literally, he's an engraving professor in Kansas. He and I have put together two engraving portfolios where we get engravers from all over the country, and we've gotten a couple in Europe to send us a print and create a portfolio. Well, we've gotten the guy who did the Lincoln head on the $5 bill. He's part of our portfolio. Will Fleischel is his name. So it's really interesting to see all these engravings from across the country. In fact, I've gotten Brian Kelly to send me some too. He's a good engraver. But yes, that's what I'm doing right now in terms of intaglio. That's the technique I'm doing. Mm-hmm.
And so give people a sense of, we're familiar with money. Most people, we're looking at engravings every time we pull out bills. What are your subjects? What do you, I mean, people know, they understand that kind of very technical kind of engraving.
Right.
What sort of subjects do you and your students and other people you know who engrave, is it a wide variety of subjects?
Engravings are anything, mm-hmm, but because of the technique, it tends to lend itself more to sort of an organic shape. And when I do it, it generally are subjects of nature, like skulls and that sort of thing, bugs. But because of the movement of the plate, what you basically do is you have a tool called a burin, which is this metal tool with a wooden handle, and it's got a certain angle to it, and you sharpen it. In fact, you have to have if you don't have a sharpened burin, forget it. And you put it to the plate at a very, very shallow angle. You rotate the plate, and it moves very slowly through the plate, and that creates the line. When you master it, it is, I think, the most elegant line possibly in all of art. It's a gorgeous line, but difficult. If you want to know who the best in history is, it's Albrecht Dürer. We all look up to Dürer, and one thing,
beautiful self-portrait, and
yes,
the hands. People
right,
know me
exactly.
The hands.
Dürer is also one of the best drawers of all time. In fact, I think he's the best German artist of all time. But in terms of engraving, we all follow Dürer. He's incredibly gifted at that. But he's the best example in terms of just pure engraving. And what I find comforting is that the technique has not changed for centuries. And that's one reason why I do so much drawing and this form of printmaking is because I'm doing it exactly the same way that has been done for centuries without a computer insight.
So your skills as a drawer, someone who sketches, help your etching directly.
Absolutely. I would make an argument that you can't be a good printmaker, mm-hmm, without very strong drawing skills.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you're with a very strong art department over in,
yes,
McNeese. You have quite a number of extremely talented artists, who support Care of ES.
Yes.
And we like to think are inspired by Care of ES. We imagine y'all studios with Care of ES on over there. You all exhibit a lot. You work a lot. You have a lot of students. And you yourself were a distinguished professor at McNeese, so a lot of recognition of your skill there. How do you train your students? How do you attract your students? I mean, do you, do you have auditions for art students? Do you just take whoever comes into the art department? How does that
work? Well, we do both, and we have a portfolio day where students bring their work and look at the department. We give them, mm-hmm, tours and all that, and it's a great way to bring the students. And what's fun being a professor over there is we've got a very good feeder system in Southwest Louisiana. I mean, we've gotten great students from all of the schools. But what's kind of cool is that you never know who else will walk in. One semester, I had a guy from Nepal, and it doesn't make any difference. And what we're very good at is teaching the fundamentals. And I've always been an utter traditionalist in terms of learn the fundamentals. That means going all the way back to just good old black and white design, color design. We require a lot of drawing. And then from there, when you've got more of a foundation, then you'll have more tools to say something. In my own history and being in a lot of art departments, one of the tragedies of a lot of work is that the foundation's not there. The concept is, but the tools to say it are not there. I mean, that's a pretty universal problem anyway in the arts. Mm-hmm, so we're very good at that. And I've seen one thing that keeps me going is every semester the student work is astounding, and it gets up to a national, even an international level. Mm-hmm, so it's invigorating.
Yes. Well, I always love to hear about what you all are doing there in the art department because, again, you exhibit widely and a really wide variety of creativity going on there. So I was really particularly excited to know that your pieces were in this exhibit. Let's talk a bit about portraiture, because your pieces, again, were chosen by Brian and Mary Bate for this exhibit to really set the tone, the feeling of it, very striking. Do you think a lot about what it means to create a portrait? I mean, describe specifically your father. I assume you've made portraits of other people before. What are you trying for when you create a portrait? Because there's this philosophical underlying of the exhibit that Brian and Mary are trying to get at about what it means to try and capture someone's face, someone's soul.
Right.
What do you think about when you approach a portrait?
Well, what you just said about capturing somebody's soul is my number one goal. But in actually drawing, I don't think of that. It's kind of at a lower level, and I'm not conscious of it. I simply put on my rock and roll or blues or jazz.
Or KRVS.
Or KRVS, exactly. And I just work. And it's a very, very demanding job. It's boring and it's grueling. But it's kind of almost an unconscious thing where you are tapped into your own soul. And in so doing, you're able to pull out this insight. And the best portraiture is not only the soul of who you're looking at, but it's also your own soul. And it's sort of a double thing right there. But I'm not thinking as I go over each square inch about that. It's just when I'm finally done, it's there. It's an interesting process.
Well, I like the fact that you said you're looking at your own soul too, because that struck me as I was walking around the room that my most overwhelming feeling was that I was seeing the artists far more than the actual portraits of the people.
Yeah, you're absolutely right with that. I remember a couple of years ago there was this big thing that somebody came up with a bright idea that Mona Lisa was maybe Da Vinci. Well, anybody who makes portraits knows that you project yourself on the person you're doing. So yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Mm-hmm. Every piece in there is a reflection of the artist's soul.
Mm-hmm. I was captured in a admired her work for a long time, Deborah Lester.
Those are fantastic.
A whole series of photographs that she made in Angola, I believe, of not just prisoners, but people who worked at Angola. And they're startling, but they're also, there's an interesting sameness to them all, in that in capturing them, she is also saying so much about her experience.
Exactly. Those are gorgeous. And what's interesting about that, you know, I tend to work big and all that. And
hers are very small.
Yeah, and those are extremely powerful.
Yeah.
That show is very good, and every single piece is good. And it's what's fantastic about it is the eclectic nature of it. And her work tends to be very quiet and very powerful. And we just actually showed some of her work at McNeese that were big, a whole other format. But those are extremely insightful. And even though the prisoners are in Angola, they really capture their humanity, basically.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever have discussions with other artists about, because one thing that struck me as well was that there was a whole collection, and yours actually included, where there's a real seriousness to the face. There's almost no expression in the faces. And then there was a set which was extremely expressive. But I often notice that in portraiture, drawings, photography sometimes, it's almost as if there's a command to the subject to have no expression and to just look straight at you.
Right.
Is that a technique, a style, a strategy?
I don't know if it's
portraiture?
A strategy. I think it's just when people look at themselves, it just tends to be a serious sort of examination. Mm-hmm. I think that's, at least with me, that's why it comes out that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've never been able to make it too whimsical the way it comes out. In fact, it's
I would
almost
not call
too
your
seriousness.
Work whimsical.
No, it's never whimsical.
And that's just an interesting thing that struck me, because you were in our conference room just a little while ago, and there were three portraits by Philip Gould of musicians, and one of Canray Fontenot, who's a Creole musician. And every other photograph I've ever seen of him, he's laughing and laughing, looking up at the skies, just laughing away. And this portrait, he doesn't have his glasses. He's looking straight at you as though everything has fallen, but that moment and that look and that soul.
Right. And I know a lot of photographers and artists want to capture that split second, you know, and that's the goal.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that two of your pieces, again, there are three pieces of yours in this exhibit, two of them are of your father. Who is the third one?
That's Elmer Spence. He's a He's a good friend of mine. He retired to Southwest Louisiana from Florida. He was a civil engineer out there, decided to take an art course. I think he was in his 60s. He found out that he's got some talent, and that's how I met him. And I took a photograph of him once, and it was something almost spiritual about the way he was looking, and I thought, I got to do a drawing of that. I didn't tell him, and I did it, and but that's the reason why I did that. And the heads I draw tend to be of people who have lived a while, and I like to look at their face as a story of somebody well-lived, and Elmer's lived well, and that was my homage to Elmer.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say that hanging the way they hung it in the gallery, I didn't envision it that way, but it's a fantastic triptych, and that's always fun to see how somebody else looks at your work. But the way they arranged it works really well with the way Elmer's looking in, and mm-hmm. my dad's looking in the mm-hmm. other way, and then the frontal.
Yes.
But that's Elmer. That's my homage to Elmer, who happens to be a very good artist.
Has he drawn a portrait of you?
Not of me, but he gave my wife and I a fantastic painting of our daughter at Christmas, which is beautiful. So
Elmer, and then two portraits of your dad in the exhibit. Now, you mentioned that they're, and I noticed that too, they're in squares. Of course, it would be hard,
right.
I guess, to get a piece of paper that large.
Right.
So you do them in squares. Is there a special kind of paper that you use?
That's a good question. In fact, the paper I always use, and I always make my students use it, is Reeves BFK. And it's a French paper, and it's 100% rag. And for me, it's the best paper I've come across for charcoal. And I like that size. It comes in rolls, but I don't want to deal with the rolled paper. And there's a good function that happens when it comes like that is when I put it up like that, it presents a grid. And drawing very simply is drawing on the XY axis. And I tend to be very, very ordered when I draw. That's the way I was born, and it presents a four-sided grid that helps me to order it both vertically and horizontally.
Has your dad seen that portrait physically?
He's seen the middle one physically. I had a show in Western Colorado, and he liked it. Sometimes they don't like it because it tends to be kind of frank, but dad's he's pretty fond of it, and
well,
it's given a little
like
bit of notoriety.
He seems like a very sincere, centered person just from the portrait.
He is.
Yes.
He is. And he's always – and every time I go back to Colorado, I take a photograph of him, and I've got many photographs of him. And mm-hmm. I'll keep doing them occasionally. And mm-hmm. he's got an interesting head. And I've also done a couple of my father-in-law, Roma Richard, and he's got a very interesting head. And I could do that for a while. So – it is a commitment, the people that I do choose to do. So I take a lot of photographs, and I've got a whole library of photographs. And sooner or later, I'll hopefully get to the person.
Right.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that your dad does like that portrait. Have you ever encountered people who did not like what you did of them, what you drew of them?
I've got some people that – I'll put it this way. They I think, admire the skill, but they themselves don't want to be drawn in a – frank nature like that. For example, my brother one time out in Colorado, he had just finished a run, and I took a photograph of him because he was the work of the run. He's going to let me draw that thing because it's too frank.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and speaking of, I'm not quite ready to draw myself because the lines on my face aren't there yet. So I'm going to – sooner or later I'll do myself, but I'm not there yet.
So like a fine wine, you're waiting for it to age a little
kind
bit
of,
further.
Kind of.
So unlike Dürer, I mean, he drew himself quite young.
Yes.
Or did an engraving of
right.
himself. So you don't want to do yourself at different points in your life. You want to wait till...
I'm going to wait. Mm-hmm. That being said, I've done a couple, I will put it this way, they're kind of abstract. They're abstract pieces. I've done some etchings that I consider self-portraits. Oh, I'm going to amend that a little bit. I have done three very large X-ray self-portraits that are that size. What I do is I shine a light through my X-ray, and I base all of my charcoal movement on my sinuses. And I've done three of those. So I have done a self-portrait that way.
Right. Sure.
That's really looking inside, yeah.
Some ENTs might want that in their offices
yeah.
or something. Well, I think that would make an interesting study, just what you're talking about, people who are – glad to look at their portraits, who are content seeing the frankness of what
right.
you're giving them, and those people who are not. And I did think about that as I was looking through these pictures, what people must think of these
right.
finished pictures. You know, right. Do the prisoners in Angola, do they like those pictures?
Right.
And she says she's trying to create an image that they would recognize.
Right.
That they, she's allowing them to express their best self.
Right.
But you just have to wonder what those reactions are when you actually
right.
do see.
Well, so far, at least the ones I have drawn, they've always been, I think, honored.
Mm-hmm.
Honored,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if we saw a complete exhibit of your drawings, your portraits of people, they would be older people primarily.
That and babies. I also have got a whole series of babies. And what's challenging about that is the innocence and not being not making it cute. I've actually drawn 5 at this point. I don't see any on the near horizon, but I find it fascinating to draw babies.
They're more like smooth pebbles than craggy
yeah,
rocks.
Yeah, but generally they're on fabric or on patterned couches. So there's a lot of challenge in drawing this little human being versus the whole surrounding. So that's where a lot of the texture comes in. But yeah, that's mm-hmm. the other side. So it's either newly born or later.
Craggy mountains.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting exhibit to put all of yeah. those together and let yeah. people see that. If you are tuning in, my guest is Jerry Wubin from Lake Charles. He's a professor of art at McNeese. He has 3 pieces in the exhibit FaceTime at the Acadiana Center for the Arts that will be up through June 14th. There will be a couple more art walks, I think,
right.
this Saturday. But you won't be at this one. Are you going to be
I'm going to try and make – I made the first one. Mm-hmm. I can't make it this April, but hopefully I'm going to plan on in May making
okay.
that one.
You've talked about a lot of your work, different styles, different mediums, and I'm sure people listening are wondering where they could see more of it. They'll be delighted to see the 3 pieces at the ACA, but is there anywhere that they could go?
I don't have a website yet, mm-hmm. so but if anybody's truly interested
– You're waiting until you're older.
Yeah. you can connect with me through McNeese, and I can always arrange to perhaps get a CD to them or something like that. And right now, this is the – I have no one-man show close to here. Roughly – not for another 2-3 years. I'll have another huge show at McNeese, but I'll have to wait a little bit for that.
You just recently had a retrospective a couple years ago
yeah,
at McNeese.
Lake Charles City Hall gave me a drawing retrospective. There was like 54 drawings at the City Hall, and there was 27 that were – of that size. Mm. But nothing on the near horizon. But if anybody's really interested, they can get a hold of me. I
all
can
right.
Let them see.
So that's through McNeese. That's Jerry Wubin, professor of art at McNeese. He does have 3 pieces, 3 portraits, 2 of his father and 1 of a good friend who is an artist. It greets you as you walk into the exhibit, enormous faces. It's an exhibit well worth seeing if you've not had a chance to see it. This Saturday is Second Saturday Art Walk, and of course, it's free to get into the gallery during Art Walk, so you have an opportunity to see them. And again, you can contact Jerry if you'd like to know a bit more about his work. And perhaps before your next retrospective, Jerry, we'll have you back to talk about
oh,
that
that'd
exhibit.
Be great.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.